Hello and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, college football writer with the Associated Press. This week on the show, Bear, Chris Felica from ESPN's College Game Day joins us to look at some win totals for the upcoming season. I asked Bear to give me five unders and five overs. He likes some pretty big numbers for perennial playoff contenders to go over, and at least one, maybe two teams that could be preseason top 10 to go under. Plus, we'll chat a little bit about getting ready for a season on the road with College Game Day and where the show could be heading early on in this season. Quick apology, the podcast publishing a little late this week. The rest of my job got in the way. We'll be back to a more normal schedule next week. Hope it sounds okay this week. We're out of the studio, moving around a bit. All that said, thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us at appodcast.com, where you can also find my colleague Rob Mottis. Fine NFL podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, just about anywhere you like to get your pods. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to give us a good review and rating. It helps more college football fans find us and helps us find more college football fans. And away we go. Joining me this week on the podcast, Chris Felica, the Bear, from ESPN College Game Day. This has become a little bit of a tradition around this time of the year as a way of sort of ramping up to what will end up being season previews, conference previews. At this time of the year, we start getting into, you know, the sports books provide us with a little content, right? A little over-under totals for college football teams. So I'd like to bring Bear on since he's been known to occasionally place a wager. And he's got a pretty good idea of like, he's got a pretty good eye for what might be a good value. I'd like to bring Bear on to talk a little over under. So thanks for joining me, Chris.
Oh, happy to be here. Always, never too early to get the college football juices flowing. That's for sure. And this is a nice little study for myself to kind of get rolling on the college football season. Now that we've kind of reached a point where preview materials are starting to come out and you see some win totals, you see some games of the year. So, yeah, it's definitely going to be fun.
Yeah, it's part of that for me, too. It actually is part of the preparation of it. And this is that time of the year, like we take vacation. So now I know you just had a long overseas vacation. Did you slip a preview magazine into the bag at all for the long flight, or were you completely void of college football?
Completely void of college football, okay. Which was pretty incredible. I probably should have went out shopping to try and get a college football preview magazine or two to be able to sit down at night or sit by the pool and read. But it was good to kind of get away completely. The funny thing is, I had so many. There were internet sites that were like blocked on the boat. Anything that had like I couldn't even cop on Daily Racing Form to take a look at the Preakness, which was kind of causing me to shake a little bit. But we did all right.
Wait, did you didn't get a Preakness wager in?
I did. I actually had a friend place a wager for okay. me. but I literally couldn't do it on my okay. on the site, so I literally had to just ask a buddy to do it, and then none of the and it was funny. I kind of outlined it a little bit in the podcast with San Francisco this week. Like, yeah, I couldn't even hop on. I wasn't in Connecticut, so I wasn't here. And then there were other sites I couldn't. I stood to win a lot of money on Liverpool had they won the Champions League, and I couldn't even get a. Find a way to get off of that during the match and play under. So it had its benefits and it had its shortcomings as well. But it was an awesome time.
Hey, one quick thing before we go completely into college football, and that's we got to talk hockey for a second, because before a Bear went on his trip, I had exchanged a text with him. The Rangers, Bear and I are both Islanders fans, right? We grew up Queens for me, Long Island for Bear, and So we do not want the rain. Like, you know, I don't care how, you know, New York is all, that's all great to have allegiances to New York, but both of us do not root for the Rangers. But you had said, like, in your text to me that, like, it was hard for you to get behind the Lightning too. And I know the Lightning have done a lot of damage to the Islanders the last couple of years, but there is no, like, second place as far as, like, or there is no close second as far as who I root against. I always root against the Rangers. There's nobody else that makes me root, that gives me even the thought to not root against the Rangers. So I was surprised you even had, like, the slightest bit of trepidation of, like, you know, rooting for the Lightning.
Yeah, it was one of those more, you have to just root against the Rangers. And then, but just because how the Islanders season ended the last couple of years and the Lightning's salary cap debacles last year, and just the way the Islanders lost it all came into, like, the big, like, giant perfect confluence of event, like the way the Islanders lost last year, 1-0 Game 7, shorthanded goal, too many men on the ice, the overtime game in the bubble, and then, you know, you lose Barry Trotz, so you're probably going to be a while before you get an opportunity like that again. The Rangers now were the team on the up with Gallant and Shesterkin and the young guys that they have on that team. It seems like the Islanders window, the brief window that they had with everything going right with the new arena and two straight conference finals appearances, it feels like that window is now slammed. And in the life as the Islanders being the best team in the New York metropolitan area was very short-lived, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what the frustrating thing is there, Bear. It's like, you know, it seemed like there was a real nice upward trajectory after the two straight conference final appearances where you kind of go like, oh, like, this is something that could be somewhat sustained. We have a good brain trust here. And then, I don't know. I don't want to go too deep into hockey, but I definitely share your frustration of, like, wait a second, was that it? That's like,
yeah.
We seem to be heading towards, like, a nice run of having a competent and successful franchise again after 30 or 40 years, and it turns out the window was actually just 2 years, right? All right, so we're gonna head towards college football now, because I understand that's what everybody tunes into this podcast to hear. So again, win totals are out. So what I threw at Bear was, give me 5 overs, give me 5 unders. And I have your 5 overs and 5 unders. I'm trying to figure out the best way to do this. Should we alternate overs and unders? Should we just stick with the unders?
I think stick all to them.
I think so too.
Once. That way we're not going back and forth and confusing people.
Let's start with the bad news then. Let's start with the ones that are going to be that you're thinking look like unders. And, you know, I've always noticed on this stuff, Bear, I think you and I, you know, sort of like have a similar mindset. We kind of look at things somewhat analytically, and I think we have shares somewhat similar philosophies. And I've stated this before on this podcast, even with you, my philosophy on some of these, even though I know I don't put my own money on them, but I always look at them for fun, is if you can identify some teams that maybe overachieved the year before, that's usually a place where there is pretty good value. Though I must admit, from your unders here, there are none of those on this list. I don't think there are any overachievers from last year, but I definitely looked at them and saw at least one or two that are, I think, will be good talkers. So let's start with one of them. Let's start with one of the ones that coaching change, but it's a blue blood. It's a program that has dominated the Big 12. You have Oklahoma under 9.5. And again, you know, for a lot of Oklahoma fans, they were really down about losing Lincoln Riley, really angry about losing Lincoln Riley, but they have very much moved on and embraced the Brent Venables era, even though we have not seen what the Brent Venables era is. And I think that Oklahoma, from what I've gathered from Oklahoma fans, is like a lot of, we're better off without Lincoln. Brent is what we needed to get past the failings that Lincoln had baked into our program. So what are you getting? What are you feeling about Oklahoma?
It's funny because Steve and I had a similar discussion on the pod about this, and I kind of agreed with Steve a little bit. Like, it seems like Oklahoma is like they're hanging on. They're almost more concerned about Lincoln Riley doing poorly at USC and worried about who he's bringing in than it seems like their own team. So,
I'll buy that. I think they need to move on from the Lincoln stuff. They seem to have really sort of latched on to rooting against Lincoln. I do think there's a little bit of moving on to that, but I've just been, I guess not surprised, but I've noticed or felt like they have really gone all in on Venables. Like, no. They are very confident that there won't be a transition that involves a backslide, even if it's only a little bit of a backslide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting because you have a first time head coach. There's someone who was with the program when they won the national championship back in 2000, someone who's familiar with the area, but I'm not so sure. I do love the hire of Jeff Levy. I think he's going to do really good things with that offense, but at the same time, I don't know who's going to be a part of that offense. Mm-hmm. Obviously Dylan Gabriel comes in, but you lose a majority of your playmakers. You'll lose most of the defense, which actually in the last couple of years has finally started playing well for Oklahoma. And even with Lincoln Riley and then Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler, when he had his great year a couple of years, and Jalen Hurts right before that, and last year with Caleb Williams, they were involved in a bunch of close games that they wound up winning. So, like, their margin, I think, for error in terms of, like, winning 10 games and being a 10-win or 11-win team and an 8-win team or 9-win team isn't very big. Like, if you run down their schedule, like, I'm not saying they're going to lose all of these games, but it wouldn't surprise me if they lost at Nebraska. They very easily could have lost to the Huskers last year in Lincoln. Kansas State is a team which has beaten them numerous times in the past as a big underdog. I think TCU is going to be a revived team this year with Sonny Dykes and bringing in Chandler Morris, a quarterback who might wind up winning that job with Duggan. Texas easily could have won that game last year and the year before. Like that's always a close game. They shouldn't lose to Kansas, even though Kansas will be improved. Iowa State, it may not be as good as they were expectation-wise going into last year. But at the same time, the Cyclones have beaten them in the past and given them a heck of a difficult time, even in Norman, when Oklahoma's been much better on paper, or perceived to be much better on paper than Iowa State. Baylor, yeah, they should beat Baylor at home. I love Dave Aranda, but that team loses a lot. West Virginia, who knows what you're going to get from the Mountaineers this year. Bedlam is always a tough game. Texas Tech will probably be improved, being that they're kind of all on the same page for the first time in a while. So I'd be surprised if this was a 10-win team, a 10-2 team in the regular season. I think 9-3 is a very reasonable expectation for Oklahoma, and I know they don't want to hear that. But if the Sooners go 9-3 this year with a lot of the wholesale changes that they have and some of the high variance games that are on their schedule, I think 9-3 would be a good year, and I know they don't want to hear that. Could they go 10-2? Could they go 11-1? Sure, but I think in terms of where that number is at 9.5, if you're saying 10-2 has to take 10-2 to beat me, I want to take a chance there.
Yeah, and I think that's you make a good point as far as the high variance games, and the Big 12 is always sort of the Big 12 is a place for high variance games, right? I think the one thing, even throughout some of Oklahoma's recent dominance of that conference, though they didn't win it last year for the first time in a while, it snapped, I think, a 7-year run or a 6-year mm-hmm. run of conference championships, Oklahoma. But even within that run, they would face a fair amount of close games, right? I mean, you know, they usually, you know, they would generally have the playmakers available to win those close games, but they would usually get 2 to 3, maybe 4, but 2 to 3 tests a year. I think the way you're describing it is they'll have more of those closer games as they had last year. And once you start having games that could be, instead of you being a 17, 18, 20 point favorite, you're now a single digit favorite. Well, it doesn't take much for one of those games to get away from you, and now you only win 9 games. The Nebraska game, I think, will be super interesting because I think a lot of us look at Nebraska and think, I don't know if Scott Frost is the guy to turn that program around long term. And there's a lot of questions there. But I also know that you can't have a season go as historically bad as it went last year, right? like you can't have a season where all of your 50-50 games you lose. Like that's just
over. They've had that happen like three straight years now. It's been incredible. Every year seems to be the same thing. I mean, maybe it's Adrian Martinez. Who knows? Maybe the fact that Martinez is gone maybe
we'll find out with Adrian Martinez on Kansas State that maybe it was Nebraska holding Adrian back there, which would be another interesting storyline throughout the season. Yeah, I think the Big 12 is super fascinating this year. I tend to be the if in doubt, go with Oklahoma because they'll usually have the most talented roster. But I look at your play. Let me just get to something you said within your Oklahoma breakdown there. Because you don't have Baylor as one of your overs or unders, but I am kind of with you in that. Like, I think Baylor is going to be a little more hyped this year than I'm not seeing it. Like, I see a lot of the way too early top 25s, and I'm seeing Baylor as maybe the Big 12 favorite, a top 15, maybe borderline top 10 team. And I find myself going, I'm not seeing that. Like, they lose a lot of players.
They do.
That's not to say like they're going to lose. They're going to fall on their face again. But I just think that so many key defensive players, so many key, you know, running backs, like that just seems like a pretty good. That's and plus another team that won a lot of close games last year. I figure like there's a little bit of regression to the mean for Baylor.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. I'm glad you didn't mention it. Like the quarterback position, I actually thought they were better off with Shapitt at quarterback than Mahaney. So, like, I don't see that as a negative, but you lose what, Abram Smith, and you lose all those guys on defense. Now, I know that the staff is terrific, and I love Aranda, and I love the changes that he made on that staff. But, yeah, I think it's going to be hard for them to certainly come close to winning the Big 12 again like they did. Yeah, I'm not going to argue with anybody who picks Oklahoma, because the one thing you know is you are likely going to have the best roster in the league. You know, you're not going to be embarrassed ever by picking Oklahoma to be the Big 12. They're always going to be in it. But I know they're not a Big 12 team, but can we talk Nebraska for a minute? Because another thing that Steve and I were looking at, like, if you look at their schedule, like, because we hit on it with Oklahoma, like that Oklahoma game is massive for them. Like, if they were to pull an upset, which I think I looked at Chris Andrews' games of the year, the lines, and I think they're only like a -3 in Norman, or in Lincoln rather, which is about right. Like, so it wouldn't be this massive upset. I mean, there's a good chance Nebraska wins that game. Like, if you look at that schedule, there's a really good chance. Like, I don't want to say really good chance, but it would not be unrealistic, I guess I should say, for Nebraska to be 9-0 when they go to Michigan on November 12th. Because if they get past Oklahoma, you assume that they'll beat Northwestern and Ireland. And we know if Patrick Fitzgerald in Ireland and Dublin at the Emerald Isle, whatever it's called, it's going to be all wound up. He's going to have his shorts on and being all fired up on the sideline. But you come back, you get North Dakota and Georgia Southern. You should win those games. Then you get Oklahoma. And if you happen to win that game, you get Indiana, who is down. They had the one great year in the COVID year, which was great to see. Then you get Rutgers and Purdue, which are two beatable teams. They're both on the road. And then you get Illinois and Minnesota. Like, I mean, it's not going to happen because, like we said, it's Nebraska and they've just found ways to lose all these games.
Right.
But, like, the schedule sets up, and with some of the changes that they have on that staff now, like, it is not unrealistic. Like, it's a lot. If it doesn't happen this year for Nebraska and Scott Frost, like, there's no other way. Nowhere else to turn in terms of, okay, well, we got a new quarterback. We got a bunch of staff. There's nowhere else to go. It'll be the end. But I'm rooting for Nebraska. I hope they do get a turnaround this year.
Yeah, you know, listen, Nebraska will always have some potholes on their schedule as far as the Wisconsins of the world. They get Michigan this year. Did they not have Ohio State this year?
Nebraska does not. No.
They had been sort of locked into it, quote unquote, locked into an Ohio State rivalry. Yeah.
They had Ohio State and Michigan State, I think, from that division for the last couple of years, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, which has just made life even harder on Scott Frost. Yeah, in so many ways, it truly is like, and I can, you know, when you start diving into it, there's a lot of reasons why, Trev, I thought, I was stunned that they brought him back because it's just not the DNA of college football right now.
Major happy they did.
Yeah, but I wasn't necessarily, I didn't think it was a terrible idea. Again, when you start digging into like how the season went last year, and also, hey, be a little fiscally responsible, save a little money. But also, the more you look at what the schedule sets up this year, it becomes an easier choice, right? Just as you said, if you can't do it this year, I am convinced you'll never be able to do it. If you can show progress with, you know, a relatively manageable Big Ten schedule with no Ohio State on it to break your spirit with one of those 40-point losses, though they hung, if I remember correctly, hung with Ohio State last year, and they've hung with Ohio State a couple of times, but they've also had some, you know, massive beatdowns by Ohio State. Yeah, if you can't get it rocking this year, and I, you know, the funny thing is, it really isn't the Michigan game, Wisconsin and Iowa game. It is all those games that will lead up to those games, because those are the games that Nebraska has been losing to Illinois last year, losing games, even though not last year was their best game last year, was to Northwestern, but they've lost to Northwestern two or three times in the last few years. You know, losing those type of games to Purdue and maybe, you know, let's just say a quote unquote rebounding Minnesota. Indiana team. Yeah. If they can take care of business in these games, you would assume they should be able to take care of business up. That alone represents progress.
Yeah, and I think, like, getting back to the coaching change and the decision to keep, like, I wonder, and I would hope it would, that Trev would have taken a look, like, looking at the national landscape, and you saw all of the big jobs that opened up this year, like, where Nebraska was going to slot in terms of who were you going to get. Now, there are people out there that would say, who cares what you get? They'll be better than Scott Frost. I'm not so sure. I don't know what ultimately would they have slotted in above Virginia Tech, below Virginia Tech? Like, where would they be in terms of like a coach saying, okay, Nebraska is where I want to go in the Big Ten, where they've seemingly struggled the last however many years, and now they have one on the road who can't even get a turnaround. Is that the job that I want? So I'm happy that they didn't do the immediate knee-jerk, got to fire the coach right away, because like you said, I think they looked at this, Trump probably looked at the schedule this year and looked at what was on there and the way it's set up, and was like, okay, I'm going to give him one more shot, knowing that if it doesn't happen now, I can say, look, I gave you every chance possible for the best of both of us.
Okay, so our Oklahoma conversation led to Nebraska, which for guys our age makes perfect sense, because they went for as we grew up with college football fans, they were always linked. Let's move on to another under. Again, we're going to have five unders, five overs. That was a long conversation. We may move a little faster on.
I'm sorry.
No. That's trust me. Some of these will be a little easier to sum up.
Yes.
And let's go to one that will be a little easier to sum up. And that's USF. Because remember, Bear's not just going to go big names, big brands here. He's going to find value all over the board. Now, USF, I think, is a program that under Jeff Scott has been very bad the last couple of years. I do think there is reason to believe that they might be able to get it together under him. I think he's going to get a long leash. I think that you could see signs of improvement this year, but even within those signs of improvement, 4.5 against what they're up against on that schedule, I think I'm leaning your way here as far as they don't get to 5 wins.
And it was funny, I mentioned Bahana, that's actually where he wound up transferring to. But they were one of the worst teams in the country last year in stretches. And you look at the schedule in the non-conference, and you've got BYU, Florida, and Louisville.
I mean, that's just crazy.
For an American, for an AAC team, a bottom level AAC team, they, like, you're going to be behind the eight ball already there. Before you're going to be 1-3 most likely before you play East Carolina and that offense, and you go to Cincinnati, who's the best team in the league. So, I mean, 1-5 is not an unrealistic opening stretch for Jeff Scott and the Bulls. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue with their rebuild season is you want to get a little positive momentum. Hey, we got to teach kids how to win. We want to get that winning feeling. And it's going to be really tough for them. They could be a lot better and still be a 3 or 4 win team. They could show signs of progress. And again, for people who have had in their head, hey, you know, if he doesn't get it turned around this year, is that going to be it? They're pretty locked into a long-term build down there to a long-term plan. My sense is just any sign of progress at USF will be enough to give Jeff Scott another year.
You look at last year, they beat FAMU and they beat Temple, who was terrible. And they couldn't stop anybody. So I don't know if the quarterback change itself is going to be enough. Maybe you beat Temple again on the road, but like, I don't see a Tulsa on the road and they're always a scrappy team. You go to Houston and they're going to be good. It's 5 wins seems hard to come by, man.
Yeah, they even drew the tough draw within the conference in that they get Cincinnati, Houston, and of course they play their rival UCF. Okay, so we'll go to the Pac-12 for a couple more before we get to the last of the unders. We'll do a double here. Arizona, you have Arizona State under 6.5, Stanford under 4.5. Two very different positions those programs are in terms of like sort of with Stanford, it's a little bit of wow, like is David Shaw just not going to be able to get this back? And if he doesn't, like what does Stanford do next? And as for Arizona State, boy, things have really gone off the rails for Herm Edwards. And, you know, again, 6.5 doesn't seem like that much, but there's just been so little good news coming out of Arizona State in the last year and a half.
I mean, the only thing coming out of Arizona State are like all of the players who have departed via the portal and who are really Jaden Daniels gone, or Rashad White gone, like Donovan West gone, like Pearsall gone, like they're gone. And then got the NCAA cloud hanging over. Like, look, I like Herm Edwards and working with him. He's energetic, exciting. He's a great guy. But I don't know how Emory Jones, is he really going to be like the guy to come in and like.
I think Emory Jones is pretty good, but I don't see him as in any way being an upgrade on Jaden Daniels. I think his best is probably what they could have maybe hopefully gotten out of Jaden Daniels, but that's not necessarily like a game changer, I don't think.
I guess the one thing I will say though, and I'll give Jeff Schwartz a pop because he was the one that kind of keyed me in on this. Like you heard, like he said out West, like there were rumblings about like the team and the staff hated Jaden Daniels. And the only reason
that's true.
That he had heard that people were talking about the only reason they signed him and kept him around was to make inroads in Los Angeles with recruits. So like, I don't know, but I mean, can they be worse at the quarterback position or as a result? I don't know. But you look at this guy, like as much as we make fun of USC, like they will be better. Arizona is going to be improved. I know they've done pretty well on that rivalry in recent years. Arizona State on the road, tough Utah. It won't be Utah. UCLA is a good team. So 7-5, I think, will be tough for the Sun Devils this year.
Yeah. And just, you know, again, like you got to work with Herm a little bit. I don't really know Herm quite as well. Met him a couple of times, and he is definitely a likable person. So when I say this, this is not to target Herm the person, but Herm the Arizona State football coach hasn't been producing results all that much better than Todd Graham, the Arizona State football coach. No. And there was an opportunity, they thought, over the last couple of years that the team was trending up, and that never transpired. Right now, the pandemic year sort of blew up that for most of the Pac-12 teams, so that there's no reason for me to feel like there's a trajectory here towards, oh no, this is the year they break out. And honestly, to get to the number, you wouldn't even necessarily need a breakout year, but a road game against Oklahoma State is their big non-conference game. That's probably a loss. Mm-hmm. And then you start digging into the Pac-12 and you say, okay, well, if we win two non-conference games, where do we find 5 Pac-12 wins to get to that number, to beat 6.5? Yeah, I don't necessarily see it. You pivot to Stanford, and you know, Bear, it's like it's hard not to respect the job David Shaw has done there over the years. It's hard not to respect David Shaw just as a figure in college football. But he has always been a coach whose style of coaching, the way he has built Stanford, or the way he helped build Stanford after Jim Harbaugh was there, and the sort of the philosophical backbone of being sort of the tougher program at a time when a lot of programs were sort of moving away and becoming more finesse. You sort of love that. But at this point, I don't know what Stanford is. It's gotten harder for Stanford to be good, regardless of who the coach is. I think in the NIL era and the transfer portal era, where Stanford is not going to go out and get 15 transfers because you got to get into Stanford.
Exactly.
So I don't know. Like, I think part of me enjoyed Stanford's high point, enjoyed Stanford being sort of a second tier, you know, college football powerhouse, and now misses that and would like to see them be good again. So I think my heart sort of is moved towards maybe this is the year they'll turn around. Maybe this is the year they'll get it right. But when you start looking at the reality, it doesn't sort of go where your heart go, where my heart goes.
No. I mean, obviously they have the quarterback in the key, but I don't know what else they have. And that's the problem. Like, I think it kind of like what we're seeing now, what I had been told about during the COVID era, like I don't know how many schools dealt with this. I mean, maybe a majority, maybe some other ones didn't. Someone telling me about Stanford was just kind of one example, but they couldn't bring anybody on campus. And if you get to Stanford's campus and you go there and you see the area and the school, and you get to see firsthand the academic experience you're going to get there, and just the beauty and the weather, like, you're sold, you're going there. It makes David Shaw's job a heck of a lot harder just to get on a Zoom call and be like, yeah, come to Stanford and we can sell you on the program. Like, I think they lost out a lot on some of the recruits that they were able to get or unable to get as a result of that. If indeed my information that I was given was correct, and I don't have any reason to believe it wasn't. But if you look at the schedule as well, like, there's a really good chance that they're 1-5 hosting Arizona State. Like, you'll beat Colgate. That's a win. But every single, I mean, USC, you're not better than USC. Washington is down as they are, but with the new coach, I think, and a new quarterback, I think you'll see some improvements, certainly on the offensive side of the ball from UW this year. Oregon is still better than them, even though Stanford did pull that upset last year.
They beat USC and Oregon last year.
Yeah.
But it seems unlikely that that's going to happen again.
Right. And then Oregon State should be better. So they go to Notre Dame. So like that's a tough road to hoe. 1-5 is not out of the realm of possibility.
That's it. So you're right. You have your Notre Dame. You finish the season against BYU, which I believe is going to be very good again this year. Bring a lot of players back. I think the one, if you want to look at the optimistic side for Stanford, because again, more pessimism is all of their crossover games are. They got the short end of the stick, right? They didn't get Colorado. They didn't get Arizona. They got all the other, you know, better teams in the Pac-12. Well, what used to be the Pac-12 South. They're not crossover games anymore, but what used to be the Pac-12 South. I think the Pac-12 North, other than Oregon, I see a lot of question marks, including Stanford. So that's the one thing, if I'm trying to find an optimistic, you know, a more optimistic storyline for Stanford, can they get to that 4.5? Because 4.5 is the number. So you got to get to 5. I look at Washington State, Cal, and you mentioned Oregon State, and Oregon State, Jonathan Smith's done a really nice job there. And even Washington, I think there's enough uncertainty among all those teams in the North, well, what used to be the North, other than Oregon, that maybe that provides a path for Stanford to get to that 5 or 6 wins. So again, I'll just try to play the optimist here and say that's the path. The path is the Pac-12 North teams, or what used to be the Pac-12 North, in general, behind Oregon, seems to be very much in flux right now.
Yeah, I would certainly buy that, because you got new head coach at Wazoo, new head coach at UW, and a couple other, Cal, who knows what's going to happen with them, when they have difficulty scoring points. But like we talked about with the Big 12, a lot of variance there, a lot of high variance games, a lot of high variance games potentially in the Pac-12 North too.
Yeah, and if I'm Stanford, I should not feel like I'm ever that far behind Cal and Oregon State. I would say, put it that way. I might be, but I should never feel like those two games, those are going to be tough ones for me. If I'm Stanford, I got to think of those two games as winnable. So the last under, so far, just to review, Bear likes Oklahoma under 9.5, Stanford under 4.5, Arizona State under 6.5, USF under 4.5. The last one, I saved it for last because I think it's the most interesting one, is Texas A&M under 8.5. Now, Texas A&M is going to start the season in the top 10 of the AP rankings. I don't know that for sure because nobody's voted yet, but I'm pretty confident Texas A&M will start the season easily top 10 team. There's been a lot of, again, we talk about momentum and trajectory, the trajectory of that program, even with last year only winning 8 games, I generally think is up. You don't bring in a historic recruiting class and not feel like the trajectory of your program is pointing up. But it is a weird year. There's been so much positive sort of momentum around Texas A&M, but they only won 8 games last year. We don't know what the deal is with their quarterback. Jimbo really hasn't figured out that offense in a way that makes you feel super confident that they have a, you know, 21st century can fire up and outscore Alabama offense. And as great as your recruiting class was last year, they're still the freshmen. Like, how much are you going to get out of that recruiting class immediately? So, yeah, listen, you're going to probably, you might end up being in College Station early next season with Miami going there, surrounded by a bunch of Aggies wondering, hey, man, Bear, why are we so down on us Aggies? What's going on here?
Yeah, they hate me already because a couple of years ago, we did a little video, one of those little Saturday night recaps on the way to the bus, and I talked about how A&M, again, they don't even hear what I say accurately, which I know is shocking. Talking about when A&M is in one of these big hyped ranked versus ranked matchups, they always seem to fall flat on their face and never win one of them. So then, of course, when they beat Alabama last year, they bring that back up, and I felt they failed to realize that it really wasn't ranked. One of those hyped ranked versus ranked matchups. Yeah. They were a massive underdog after they had lost 2 games in a row coming into that game. So they can whatever they want to do is fine. But the future is obviously bright for A&M. But that's the thing. I've already been commenting about when some of these numbers came out. I talked about how I brought up Oklahoma under 9.5 and A&M under 8.5. And they were like, oh, well, this we beat Alabama last year, and we had a backup quarterback. Well, we lost those games because we had a backup quarterback. Well, yeah, you had a backup quarterback when you beat Alabama, too. So, it counts for the losses but doesn't count for the wins. So it was really – look, fans wrote, every team's going over. My team is going to be great. That's how we are. But A&M is a team that they have beaten the Mississippi schools – Ole Miss and Mississippi State in the same year once since Johnny left. Like, that's not a given that they go to Starkville and win. It's not a given they beat Ole Miss in College Station. You got Miami in the non-conference, who they're a touchdown favorite over Miami, and they should win that game. Arkansas has been a thorn in their side. You go to Alabama, and look, I know it's going to be a highly anticipated game, but you're probably not going to beat Alabama 2 years in a row, especially going there. South Carolina's improved. I don't know how good they're going to be, but they'll be better, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. Florida, I think, is kind of in a reset type of year. Auburn, you don't know what's going to happen, and then get LSU at the end of the year. Like, could they go 10-2? Sure, but I just look at the probability of all. Even App State is not a gimme game in the non-conference as well. They'll win. They'll be a big favorite, and they should win that game. But that's not a team that you're looking to schedule in the non-conference and look for an automatic win. So look, could they win 9 or 10 games? Sure, but it looks like another. In my opinion, I think they lose at least one of the games to one of the Mississippi schools. I think they lose to Alabama. I think LSU at that point in the year, once Brian Kelly puts his mark on that team, that will be a different team. It wouldn't surprise me if they lost to Arkansas again.
Yeah, I think they have one of the most interesting situations as far as quarterback and a freshman, right? Connor Wegman is there. It was Wegman or Wegman. It's probably Wegman. So I'm going to apologize to Connor there. Connor Wegman is a big five-star prospect. Now, we haven't seen Haynes King. We've seen very little of him because he got hurt last year. So there's just sort of a lot of question marks around that quarterback position. But I sense that what you could see out of A&M is a possible I'm interested to see if they have an in-season transition to the freshman. If at some point they sort of go, okay, this is truly our future. Here's the five-star. Let's let this kid roll. But I don't know if a season like that produces 9 or 10 wins. I think it's probably more important for Texas A&M over the next couple of years. Again, there's so much attention on Texas A&M and Jimbo will now have been there 5 years with his monster contract and guaranteed 10-year deal. It's hard to say, oh no, they're pointing for 2023. It's like, hey, boys, like Jimbo, you've been here 5 years. We're not pointing anywhere anymore. The time is now, but I still look at Texas A&M kind of like you as more of a 2023 breakout than a 2022 breakout. But I'm so fascinated of how this is going to play out and how Texas A&M fans will feel about Jimbo, who has had a lot of goodwill and built up a lot of cred by going after Saban and defending his program and not to mention beating him on the field last year. Jimbo's built up a lot of credibility. What does that look like after another 8-4 season? Or maybe they do squeak out 9-3, but the fact of the matter is 9-3 is not what they signed up for.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think they will. If they go 8-4, which would be an under, I think there will be outrage, but there will be anger and frustration, and this is not good enough type of deal. And I think they'll even feel that way at 9-3.
No, that's what me too. Like I don't think 9-3 is getting it done. I think again, you've been there for 5 years. Now again, if they layer another top 2 or 3 recruiting class on there, okay, well. You know, again, maybe we'll point to 2023 for the breakout. And again, I think it's that quarterback situation. I don't want to disparage the kid who was there last year who we didn't get a chance to see a lot of. But I do think that if they can get Wegman in place and ready to sort of become a star, and all of a sudden you have a truly big time quarterback at A&M, and they can sort of find some receivers because Jimbo hasn't done a very good job at doing that over the last few years of his A&M tenure plus the end of his Florida State tenure. So that's been a little weird. But yeah, I find Texas A&M to be one of the most fascinating teams in the country this year, just because of the odd spot they are in as far as their development. They've gotten a lot of attention. They're going to get a lot of love, but I'm not quite sure they are ready to succeed at the level that their fans are expecting them to succeed. So that presents all kinds of intrigue in the SEC West and in College Station. So those are the unders. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Chris Felica from ESPN's College Game Day. We are going to come back and hit his 5 overs. Talk a little bit about game day here on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.
You're listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast with your host, Ralph Russo, the Associated Press college football writer. If you have any questions for our host or any of our guests, email the show at aptop25mailbag@gmail.com. And to get the rest of your football fix, also take a listen to the AP Pro Football Podcast with host Rob Motti, writer and sports radio personality, as he tackles all the important news on and off the field of the National Football League and provide you with insider exclusives and in-depth analysis, along with insightful interviews with Hall of Famers, current players, coaches, and executives. Rob will take you around the league, break down the biggest games, and keep you in the know only the way AP can. Like, subscribe, and comment wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.
And we're back on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. The Bear from ESPN College Game Day, Chris Felica is joining me this week. We do our over-unders at this time of the year. So this is about third year anniversary of this this show. Always appreciate the Bear coming on and doing this. We hit some unders. Now we're going to hit some overs. And the most notable thing about your overs is you shopped at the top shelf of the overs. You were not scared away by some really big numbers. So let's just start with this combination of three. Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama, all over 10.5. That's now sometimes those numbers are so big, they're meant to sort of scare you away. Hey, man, they got
it. And you're laying, and with Georgia and some of the, like, you're laying $2 on the, on over 10.5. So people get scared away from that. But I think when you look at the schedules and the situations for these teams, it doesn't scare me away.
Georgia was the one. Let's stick on Georgia for a second here, because it's hard to get scared away from Alabama and Ohio State, especially Alabama. Alabama almost never loses two regular season games. So, yeah, to assume that they will go 11-1 is not necessarily a big stretch for Alabama. The one thing with Georgia is, as well as they've recruited and coming off a national championship, they lose so much. To me, I find myself thinking, like, the idea that they could just slip back a little bit in performance from last year, not have a historically great defense, it doesn't seem like a small regression would be all that shocking for Georgia. But apparently, even a small regression is, you still think, gets them to 11-1.
That's what I was going to say. A small regression means what? Maybe they lose one. Like Jalen Carter was the best player defensively last year. He's back. Nolan Smith is going to have a ridiculous year. Like, they're loaded. Offensively, they're going to be better than they were.
You do? You think they're going to be better offensively?
I think they'll be better offensively. Yeah, I do. They're going to be a 2-touchdown favorite in every game. You look at the possible games, like who's going to compete with it? Like, I think people may say, yeah, Dan Lanning in his first game in Oregon, the games in Atlanta, maybe they can sneak up on him. Maybe South Carolina gets him in Columbia. But, like, the Tennessee game is home. Like, people might point to the back-to-back road games with Mississippi State and Kentucky late in the year. But I just don't see them losing twice. I'd be stunned if they lost twice. I really would.
Yeah, I would. I don't know if I, again, I don't think I would necessarily put money on this one anyway, even if I was inclined to do that. But I do, again, get the sense of, I'm surprised you think they're going to be better offensively, because I'm still, I still
those find three myself, tight ends. You bring in Gilbert, who's got, I guess,
that's
got
true. That's
a lot
true.
Of it, a lot of these issues off the field stuff squared away, and you still got Bowers and you still got Washington. I mean, that is a nightmare of a matchup for defense.
When will be the first time that you'll hear they got to replace Stetson Bennett? At what point during the season?
At halftime of the Oregon game, when he throws a pick six against the Ducks defense, that's when the calls will come for him to get moved to the bench.
That's funny. I was circling the at South Carolina game, where maybe it's only like 13-3 at halftime before they bury South Carolina in the second half. I'm not as optimistic on South. I think you're right. I think they have the potential to be a little better offensively because of Spencer Rattler. But I think South Carolina was a little smoke and mirrors last year. And if anything, it could be one of those classic situations you hear people talk about, like the roster could get better. They could be a overall better team, but the record slides back a little bit. I think, because I'm with you, I look at their Georgia's schedule, and that's the place where I think, like, you're right, even a little regression in performance. Who are they losing to? Like, can you see them losing in Starkville? That Starkville, Lexington back-to-back, I don't know. Maybe there's one L in there. Like, I could see them. I could see Georgia taking one L.
Right, and that's why the 10.5 is so appealing. If it were 11, I wouldn't play it. But 10.5, like, you allow one loss.
Yeah.
That's why I'm pretty high on that.
Yeah, and for Ohio State and Alabama, again, that just seems like, again, the only thing that's going to, they're going to try to scare you away with the big number, but it's just hard to find places on there on the, with those two teams, especially. Like, is there, there's no place where they're going to be not favored. I mean, is it possible Alabama is not a favorite going into A&M? No, I think they're going to be a favorite in every game, both Alabama and Ohio State.
No, you look at Alabama and there's talk about defensively this being ridiculous. And obviously with Anderson in the ends that they have, the pass rushers that they have, that's going to be a very dominant type defense. And we'll see if they can replace some of the receivers and Bryce Young can have another fantastic year.
There's some nitpicking on their offense right now. In that, they had to bring in a Vanderbilt tackle. They had to bring in a Louisville
and Georgia Tech running back. Catches. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not too worried. I'm not too worried about that. So the interesting, one of the interesting ones as far as your so there's your three of your overs, and they're all big numbers, 9.5. Mm-hmm. If you're very confident in Ohio State being over, some of these things they tend to cross streams, right? So if you're confident that Ohio State's going to be 11-1, but you're also having Notre Dame as an over at 8.5. Now, Notre Dame and Ohio. Now, it's only one game. Ohio State, you know, you're, in fact, that's where game day will be. Opening weekend is at in Columbus for Marcus Freeman's first game.
Have we officially said that yet? I don't even know.
You were gone. No, that has officially been announced.
See, there we go. See,
well, you didn't even know.
No, I shut down. I've shut down from work. I shut down from everything. I'm in the middle of the Mediterranean and the Aegean. Like I had no idea if that was even announced. So good. I'm glad to hear we'll be there.
Unless I've misconstrued that. Now I'm going to have to Google it. I'm pretty sure college game day wasn't.
If you're saying it, then it's true.
You really should. I can't believe you didn't get the memo. I'm glad to know that I just broke it.
Well, I might have gotten a memo, and I just kind of just did the mass delete on the work email when I was away because I didn't care to see anything.
Yes, I am glad. I am glad that I was able to tell you where you're going to be working the first week of the season. Anyway, the point of this is. You're right. Listen, Ohio State can, I mean, Notre Dame can still break 8.5 and lose to Ohio State. But I did find it interesting that you were so confident in Notre Dame and Ohio State breaking 10.5, but you still are confident in Notre Dame getting to 9.
I am. And I looked at, you look at their
schedule. I think Notre Dame's schedule is, I think this is a rough year for Marcus Freeman to go in there. Not that they're going to be bad, but boy, I think he's going to get a rude welcome.
Well, yeah, the opening game, sure. But after that, like I was making the argument that, like, would it surprise you if they didn't lose again? Like,
really?
Seriously?
It would, like, yes, it would surprise me.
Really?
It would surprise me a lot. Well,
I mean, Clemson has a massive, massive questions on their offense.
Okay.
USC, who the hell knows what's going to happen there? They're massively hyped. Offensively, they're probably going to be very good. But defensively, they stunk. You go to North Carolina, you're going to trust North Carolina?
Yeah.
You got Marshall, Cal, Stanford, UNLV, Syracuse. Will they? No, they will probably lose a game or two in there. But I think 9-3 is like a worst-case scenario.
So
For Notre Dame, looking at that, I'm assuming they're going to lose to Ohio State. And yeah, okay. That I am assuming. But if they ran the table and found themselves in a New Year's Six game, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay, so I guess I'm looking at, oddly, I know this is going to break people's brains, but I find myself thinking that UNC will be better this year. Because of the way
they burned me last year. So maybe I'm a little jaded and holding a grudge against them. Just at how
that's fair.
Badly that's... they disappointed last year. But yeah, and that's why this year I'm kind of taking the cautious approach with NC State. Cause I think it's kind of like the same thing here. There's some teams whose DNA, like you have like 9-3 stamped on your forehead. Like that's kind of like what some of these programs are. Like if you go 9-3, you're having a great type of year. And the hype train at NC State has me very, very reminiscent of what we saw last year with the Cardinals.
I I am kind of with you on that, and I was going to bring you back to NC State later in the conversation. But anyway, so yeah, I look at UNC and think, I think we were a year early on UNC last year. I was a little more skeptical about them last year, and I could see them. It kind of goes back to your DNA. When we expect a little less of you, then you succeed a little more. UNC seems to be one of those programs. I look at BYU and I think big things are going to happen there. Let's talk about Clemson for a second, because I've been talking about Clemson a lot, like with, you know, other writers who cover college football. And we talk about some of the most fascinating teams in the country. I think A&M is going to be really fascinating. I think Clemson is the most fascinating team in the country this year.
Agree.
How Clemson goes, and forget about whether we have a great Clemson team and they go right back to being the dominant team in the ACC. I think there's a lot of questions about where Clemson is heading long term. But I do think this Clemson team right now, as much as they were dysfunctional offensively last year, if they can just get things going to where they're more competent offensively this year, they'll still be very good defensively. I guess, long story short, I'm not going to necessarily, you know, decide the trajectory of Clemson on the Notre Dame game, but I do think Clemson is very much capable of winning the Notre Dame game. So if I think that Notre Dame could possibly lose at North Carolina, could lose to BYU, could lose to Clemson, could lose at USC at the end of the year, and I throw Ohio State on top of that, that's where I get a lot more, where my head is on 8.5. Like, I just find a lot, I find a lot more uncertainty, not to mention uncertainty on Notre Dame's roster. New quarterback. You know, losing some key pieces on the defensive side. And, you know, listen, I think that they also have some really good defensive players coming back in Foskey. But, key receivers gone, though they have, you know, Michael Meyer still there, the tight end. You lose Kyron Williams. So I just think there's enough building and sort of fluctuation at Notre Dame on the roster turnover. Then you throw in a new coach, you throw in a few more tough games on that schedule. And then, you know, again, like 8.5. Be a little rich for me. I could see Notre Dame getting off to, and I would be very interested to see what the reaction would be in South Bend if Marcus Freeman's first season is 8-4. I don't think that's a disaster, but they've also gotten very high expectations over Brian Kelly's last few years that, hey, no, we're winning 10 games every year now.
Yeah, no one, based on what the number is, 8-4 wouldn't be a shock at all, but I think it would be a little surprising. I think there would be some fans that were very disappointed in that. But going back to Clemson, though, I'm not sold like this automatically just goes back to what we've seen. Now maybe the fact that there are maybe lower expectations and Dabo can play up that Roy bus that he likes to fire up and the rest of y'all. Like, but I don't think people really understand how bad DJ was last year. He was terrible. And now you lose Justin Ross, and the offensive line has never really been super. And I know Shipley got it going later in the year on the ground. Defensively, obviously the defensive line is going to be good. But I don't think it's a gimme that they're just automatically right back in that like 11-1 roll through the ACC type of deal. Like, people are asking, like, who do you think will win the ACC? And I'm like, I wouldn't play Clemson at -140, but I don't know who I would play. Like, that's the thing. Like, you could tell me in the ACC, anybody except Georgia Tech, Duke, and I'm forgetting, Syracuse won the league, and I wouldn't be surprised.
I think you're right, because Clemson could still be the best team in the ACC, but not be returned back to vintage Clemson, right? I talked about Connor Weigman at Texas A&M as a freshman quarterback. I'm interested to see how that evolves. There are three of them. I'm interested to see by the middle of this season if they are playing. Connor Weigman, Clay Klubnik, who's at Clemson, and Drew Aller, the other one at Penn State. I'm interested to see if any of those three are able to sort of break through this season and end up on the field, because maybe that's the tonic. Maybe all of a sudden they move away from DJ, That said, been a little bit since Clemson has been wide receiver U. We thought Justin Ross was going to be the next one, and he got hurt, so I understand. But they had been recruiting some very highly.
Justin Dada as well.
Right. There's a whole bunch of, Ladsons and Williams is a kid that I think they're hoping to break through this year. There's been a whole bunch of fours and five-star receivers that have come through since T. Higgins left, that haven't also established themselves. So it's not just quarterback. There's a lot of other things on that Clemson offense that did not work last year.
I think they kind of got away a little bit from the formula that had worked for them offensively. What made their offense really good was when you had a productive pass catching tight end, when you had a Hunter Renfrow in the slot. You're getting these four and five star guys on the outside, big guys go up and get the ball. But I think they missed out on the guys that really made that offense go, were the underneath guys, the interior guys, guys that catch and run. So I think that may have hurt the quarterback situation as well. But now I'm curious to see if Klubnik does play right away or how early he plays, because remember when Deshaun was a highly touted guy and people were clamoring for Deshaun, how is Stout the quarterback and not Deshaun? It took Dabo a hell of a long time to make the move from Stout to Deshaun. And we'll see if
he did the same thing with Trevor Lawrence too. Now it ended up working out great.
Couple of national championships later in success, maybe down the road. Okay, now I have the equity built up. Now I can do this, and people like, so I'll be curious to see what happens with that. And Penn State's another one. Sean Clifford, he is what he is, but it's clear their offense has massive limitations with him at quarterback. Apparently great, great kid, team guy. Another team that they had, what happened last year, running back, Kane just went to not being good. And then they had quite good problems with wide receiver as well. So I don't want to pin it all on Clifford, but I think that's another team where a quarterback change would be a welcome change.
So again, I should also mention, we got our win totals from DraftKings. That's where Bear did his research. So the direct, because you may find some different totals from different places if you're looking around the internet, dear listener. The last one on the overs is another team with a new coach. And I actually was just reading up on TCU yesterday, and there's a fair amount of leftover talent. That Gary Patterson left over for Sonny Dykes. And plus, of course, Sonny Dykes is good at working the portal. He brought in some interesting talent. They lost a couple of key guys to the portal, Zach Evans, but not many. O'Shawn Mathis, the really good defensive end, is at Nebraska. But for the most part, he kept the team together pretty well, did some additions through the portal. They're going to have an interesting quarterback competition in Chandler Morris and Max Dugan, who's, been sort of a hit or miss kind of quarterback.
The injuries that he played with last year, were just insane.
Right. He's gotten hurt a lot. So I don't know if we've really ever seen the best of him, but he's also a guy who's had some very high highs and some kind of low lows. I was a little surprised that they came up on your overs. But then I dug in on them a little bit, and I'm like, that schedule looks a little manageable. They got the five home games in the Big 12 this year. SMU is their natural rival, but now SMU's on a new coach. And by the way, who knows SMU better than Sonny Dykes? So, I think I was kind of digging the TCU pick as over 6.5 after I got to sort of dive into it a little bit more.
Yeah, and I think obviously Quentin Johnson's an insanely good wide receiver, that offense could have a really, really good year. And I think the schedule, you're going to get two wins under your belt right away with Colorado and Tarleton State, and then you have the Iron Skillet with SMU, and there's a good chance that you're 3-0 hosting Oklahoma. And again, Oklahoma's a team that I'm not as high on as a lot of people are. 4-0, I think 4-0 is possible. And then, of course, if they are 4-0, they'll probably go to Lawrence and lose off of that big high the week before. And then they'll come back and beat Oklahoma State as an underdog. That's probably the way it'll go. But, you know, I've talked about like the middle, like the Big Ten, the Big 12. Like, I don't see much difference between really any of these teams.
Yeah.
And that's why I think a team with one of these middling win totals, like a 6 or 6.5, expecting them to go 7-5, is certainly a possibility. Certainly given that you get some of the your tougher 50-50 type of games. I mean, you get Oklahoma at home, you get Oklahoma State at home, you get Kansas State at home, you get Tech at home, you get Iowa State at home. Like those are the games that you want at home. Maybe you have to go to Austin, and maybe you have to go to Waco. We talked about Baylor and us really not being super high on Baylor this year. You get Kansas on the road, and while I think KU is going to be better and they're on the improve, like, it's still a team that you're going to go on the road and expect to beat. So I think the way the schedule lays out is good, and I think Sonny Dykes coming in there is going to do a bunch of good things for them offensively. They'll just have to hope that defensively on the back end that they can play well, because that's we did not see in recent years.
Yeah.
The typical stout Gary Patterson defenses that we were used to. Now maybe if your offenses are a little bit better than what they've been, maybe your defenses won't have to improve as much.
Yeah. Think of it this way for TCU. Again, especially, I know SMU's been very good over the last couple of years, but now the guy who made SMU very good is at TCU. So if you're thinking, well, I can get to 3-0 in the non-conference, and then I get my Kansas game. I've already got 4 wins, and I haven't even gotten into the bulk of my schedule, and I've still got a whole bunch of home games left. So if you just look at the TCU, you know, over 6.5 from that perspective, I think it looks pretty good. So I was going to throw a whole bunch of other teams at you, but we've actually
I was going to say one thing real, like, and I know Sonny, like he had his eyes on that job. Like, once it was Gary, sure. retire, resign, fire, whatever you want to call it. Like he had his eyes on that job, like, immediately. So like, it was one of those things, like, that kind of gives me a little bit of an extra bump. Like, okay, he knows what's there. He knows what they're capable of there. He knows the ceiling. I think he feels like he can take that program to a pretty good spot.
That's a good point. I think there, it would make you believe that the transition shouldn't be as bumpy. I think sometimes we downgrade some teams, quite frankly, Oklahoma. I'm going to downgrade Oklahoma a little bit this year simply because they're transitioning. Right. The simple thing of transitioning to a new coach leads me to believe that will probably cost you a win. I think with a team like TCU, I would think that transition could go more smoothly. So, again, Bear, I was going to throw a whole bunch of teams at you, but frankly, we covered a whole bunch of teams even within the teams that we were talking about. So I don't necessarily need to.
I love it.
I don't need to throw more teams at you. I will just run over our overs or Bears overs. Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama all over 10.5. Don't be afraid of the big number. Notre Dame over 8.5. TCU over 6.5. Before I let you run, since I told you already where you're going to be first week, I got to break.
I can book travel. I like that. I'll hop on the travel portal right now and knock that out.
I also think that I know we've talked about this. You sort of like, you know, kind of lay out the possibility of where you guys are going, because it's part of what you do. Is, you know, it's part of your job, right? You work with producers and the folks who ultimately make that mm-hmm. call to say, okay, like, here's the way the first month of the season could go. So have you sketched out a couple of okay, we're circling that one. We could be there. We're circling that one. We could be there. We mentioned A&M, Miami is a possibility. Where are some other places you could see the show heading early on this season?
I mean, I'd be shocked if we weren't in Austin on the 10th
for
Alabama. The Alabama game. I know that's a Fox game, but we never really make decisions on where the show goes based on who has the game. And then you look at the 17th and you got Georgia, South Carolina, BYU, Oregon, Miami, Texas A&M. Like, I think College Station looks like a very appealing site that day too. And none of this is obviously set in stones, and none of it's booked. But like, I would think a a Texas two-step there with Austin and College Station back-to-back is probably in order. And then September 24th, do you go back to Ohio State a couple of weeks after the Notre Dame game for Wisconsin? I mean, I guess that's a possibility. Maybe there's something off the rail. If I had to book into my crystal ball right now, I would say September 24th could be one of those. Let's take a look and see what's kind of out there off the radar right now. And just go doing Notre Dame at Ohio State and two Texas type shows, and then back to Ohio State a couple of weeks after the opener like that. And then and knowing that you're probably going to go back to Ohio State later in the year for Michigan, like it, 24th seems like I'm going to have to do a little homework here and see what else, dig a little deeper on the schedule, what's going on in the FCS or Division II or Division III or maybe a site that we haven't been to yet. Did you guys do a
kind of an off the radar game? I feel like you maybe didn't do that last year.
Well, we did the HBCU game early in the opening week of the year. We did the show from there, which was our preview show.
Okay.
From Atlanta, and that was really it. And just with the way the season and the schedule went, we didn't.
Because I know those ones that are again a little off the beaten path, whether it's a FCS D2, you know, it's not like you do a ton of them, but when you do, they also bring a great energy to the show. You know, again, I understand you always want to be at the big games and you know you're going to get big crowds. But when you guys do go a little off the beaten path, if you can hit the right ones, they really bring a lot of charm. And also, I think they provide just something different, right? I mean, we've all seen the big campuses and the atmosphere there, and it's all great. But I do think getting away from the traditional spots to the places where there are a little bit of the outposts or a little deeper into college football, if you can, I think it's one of the things that makes the show great.
And I know there might be some Cincinnati fans like going crazy right now that I didn't mention that. That was not like a one-off. That was a legit show because Cincinnati was second in the country at the time and undefeated. And that was a legitimate game against Tulsa that wound up being a one-score game. That wasn't like a cute little, hey, let's go to Cincinnati. Like that was a, like,
no, you guys needed to go to Cincinnati. Bear, you guys needed. Yeah, they were one of the stories of the season, regardless of whether they had a quote unquote really big game. And I understand, like, you know, the way their schedule broke out, they just didn't have a home game with another ranked team. But you guys, game day needed to be in Cincinnati because Cincinnati on its own was one of the major storylines of the entire season. So you're right. That was not a, oh, we're doing this just to be cute. Like, you guys needed to be in Cincinnati.
Yeah, totally. So, and then that was, and then the Alcorn State NC Central game at the start of the year where we did our preview show from Atlanta. That was really it. So yeah, I'm going to have to look on September 24th. And if you've got any ideas out there, send them our way.
Yeah, exactly. Tweet about Bear. Chris Felica is the Bear on College Game Day. He is one of the best. Chris, man, thanks so much for coming and doing the show again. I think this is the third anniversary of our over-under show.
I think you're right.
Always appreciate the insight. Bear is been known to throw down a wager or two. So when he gives you these over-unders, unlike me, he is actually putting his money where his mouth is. Just so you understand. Unlike me, I'll give you an opinion, but I'm not betting. Bear will most likely be putting some money where his mouth is on these. So
I did, and I might have even fired in some golf plays as we record this during the first round of the U.S. Open. And Rory McIlroy's bogey on 18 will probably.
Who do you like? Where's your money this weekend in golf?
I play pre-tournament. I posted it up on Twitter the other day. I played John Rahm at 14-1. I played Colin Morikawa at 30-1, and I played Dustin Johnson at 44-1. And then in round live, I played a little Rory first round leader at plus 115. And that bogey on 18 dropped him into a three-way tie here for first. So we'll see if anyone in the afternoon wave goes out and posts four under, or if I'll get a little dead heat rule and a little bit of money back here. So, I'm going to be so unproductive Thursday, Friday, and then Sunday when I come home. It's just, I'm just going to be sitting, watching golf, watching horse racing. It's going to just be a beautiful weekend.
You've already got me fired up for my golf nap coming up after I post this show. Bear, thank you so much for doing it as always. Hopefully we'll see you in person at a campus, maybe even, quite frankly, very well in Columbus.
I would think there's a good chance. A little game of significance.
Thanks, Bear. And now, three and out. First down, the newly realigned conference lineups are officially set for the 2023 season. Late last week, the American Athletic Conference announced it had reached a deal with the three schools departing for the Big 12, Houston, UCF, Cincinnati, to pay an extra $8 million over 12 years to leave the AAC a year early. Total of $18 million is going to be the exit fee. So the Big 12 will have 14 teams in 2023, including new member BYU to go with the AAC teams and outgoing members Texas and Oklahoma. The AAC will also be a 14-team conference in 2023. The six new members from Conference USA have been made official that they will be joining next year. As a reminder, those schools are Charlotte UAB, Rice FAU, North Texas UTSA. It's a lot of letters in there. Conference USA will replace its departures with Sam Houston State, New Mexico State, Liberty, Jacksonville State. I hope you got all that. It will be on the test. Second down, the Big 12 does not yet have a new commissioner and probably won't for about another month. Last I was told, the conference was just starting to assemble a list of candidates. I have not heard of any names outside of the most obvious ones that were tossed around by my colleagues and I when Bob Bowlesby announced he was stepping down about a month and a half ago. The Big 12 media days, circle your calendar for those. Scheduled for July 13th and 14th at the home of the Dallas Cowboys. I sense, and I think, it's a safe bet that the conference's new commissioner will be addressing the media at that event. Third down, the NCAA met with Miami's billionaire booster, John Ruiz, to discuss NIL deals he has funded for the Hurricanes athletes, which of course sparks a whole new round of persecution complex for Miami fans. Regardless of that, I have heard from a lot of folks inside college sports how the NCAA needs to do something to send a message about using NIL in recruiting. And if it doesn't take some kind of stand, the NCAA that is, against some school that may have crossed the line, wherever that line may be, then why did it even bother issuing the clarification to the bylaws that it sent out a few weeks ago? I get that thinking, but the NCAA is also very apprehensive right now to hand down any type of punishment that could be construed as hurting or penalizing the athletes themselves. Would the NCAA force Miami to disassociate from Ruiz? I certainly can't see that. If the NCAA does want to send a message, what does that even look like? And can it be anything more than a slap on the wrist? I doubt it. That is the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, John Radcliffe, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and just about anywhere you'd like to get your pods. Please follow so you do not miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening. And come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.